Knudsen.
What's going on, Tursky?
Two guys talking golf.
It is. It is. We're back again. You know?
We're in the new sound studio, aren't we?
We are. It's definitely not finished, so the sound may be a little off.
If it's echoing a bit, we know.
Yeah, we know. We're kind of in a basement.
We're in a basement.
Yeah.
It's our new sound studio. We're figuring it out.
Yeah, we'll have some stuff up. It'll sound way better shortly, but right now it's pretty crude.
If you want to see some photos of it, go on Instagram, TG2WRX.
Yeah.
And we got some photos of it. You can check it out.
Yeah, I'll post a couple here. And right now it's just kind of a table, and we got like one piece of artwork, which is pretty sweet.
And shout out to Pops for the artwork.
Yeah. Tursky's dad is one heck of an artist. So yeah, we got one piece.
Yeah, we'll get that Instagrammed as well.
Yep. And then, but yeah, shortly we'll have some stuff on the walls. It'll deaden some of the sound, and it won't be so hard to listen to us.
Also, make sure to follow us, TG2WRX, for a little giveaway.
Yeah. Go check us out on Instagram. We're giving away a pretty sweet Ping Volt 2.0 putter.
Yep.
So I tried to keep it for myself. Tursky told me I couldn't.
He did.
So I guess we'll give it away.
He was being very selfish. I said, let's do something for the listeners. He said, no, I want it. Yeah. I said, wow.
I mean, you can never have too many putters. I mean, we all know this. You got to have enough putters, you know, to put one in time out. So,
but yeah, follow us to get entered into the giveaway.
Yeah, all you have to do is follow. We're not making you do anything crazy. We're not making you sign up for anything. Just follow us on Instagram, and you're entered.
If you lose the giveaway, you can click on follow. I mean, you know, if that's how you feel about us, that's how you feel. What are we going to do?
Man, that'd be pretty rude. Just like, you know, yelling for a ball to get in the bunker. But, you know, that's not.
We don't have to talk about that one again.
No. So.
So what do we got going on today, Nuds?
So we got some news. I dropped something off at your desk today.
You did.
And you've been waiting for a little while.
I was waiting patiently, and then I started waiting impatiently.
definitely impatiently the past couple days.
It went from you doing a nice favor for me to me getting upset at you.
Yeah, and I don't know why. So
I'm sorry for that.
It's okay. I mean, you know, I did some work for free for Tursky, and you know, I don't think he appreciated it until today.
So I got a new set of Mizuno MP18s,
which are beautiful looking irons.
They're sexy.
They are very nice. They're out of my league. They're straight blades.
I think they might be out of my league too.
That three iron is straight up intimidating. Yeah. That thing is, there's just nothing to it.
They say butter knife, but like I actually did butter my bagel with it. And it looked clean enough to do it too.
Yeah. Oh, it's unbelievable. But they're great looking irons. So you had these irons, but they didn't quite have your shaft in them.
No, they were shafted up with S300 AMTs.
Yep.
Is that right?
AMT S300s, which are great shafts.
They were very light.
Just not for you.
They were very light.
So Tursky came to me and said, "Hey, I gotta do a little upgrade."
Well, I like boards. I like 2x4 boards in my irons.
Little rebar.
Yep.
And so what shaft did you ask me to put in there?
So I wanted the Project X 6.5s.
That's a whole lot of shaft.
Now I grew up playing the X100s, when I was like 11, I was playing those. So I've always just been used to like playing really stiff, heavy shafts.
Yeah.
And actually, when I got to Golf WRX, Zach Kuzahuski, the old editor for Golf WRX, shout out Zach. He was like, "Why don't you try out these 6.5s?" Because he knows I have a little hook problem. I get a little bit spinny, and I hook it a little bit. And he said the 6.5s are a bit more fade biased. And ever since I put those in, I still hook it a lot, but you know, it goes a little bit less far left.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much a shaft can do. I mean, it's not a miracle worker. It's an iron shaft.
Yeah, so I like them, and I'm not one to like experiment with iron shafts too often like you are.
Yeah.
I mean, once I get stuck, I'm kind of stuck. So I've been playing Project X 6.5s for like 3.5-4 years now.
Yeah.
And I mean, other than, you know, doing a little testing here and there, hitting them on the range, I have not strayed from them.
And very loyal.
And certainly going to S300 AMTs, which are like absolute feathers.
Well, especially the long irons, because that's, you know, basically what they do. Lighter than the three iron, heavier than the pitching wedge.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I just like, to me, I can't feel where the shaft is.
Yeah.
If it's not heavy enough. And if I can't feel where the club is, it's like, how do you play in the wind? How do you hit out of a bad lie? Like, I need to know where that club's at.
Yeah.
And I need to go be able to dig in the turf and get after the golf ball.
Well, that, and like you said, I mean, you're a high spin guy. Project X is a spin killer, so a little more fade bias. So it kind of checks a lot of boxes that, you know, that you're looking to
fit. It checks all the boxes.
Every one of them. Every one of the boxes.
There's not many boxes that I have. Really?
That's true. I mean, it's pretty simple.
But it checks them.
Kill spin, don't go left. Weigh a decent amount.
And I don't want a lot going on when I'm looking down. I just want to see steel.
Yeah, and it's stepless, so I mean, it's even
stepless, and get the labels turned under, and
let's
play some golf.
So, Tursky's not a club builder. So,
he
didn't quite understand the whole, like, you know, gluing them together, but you also have to get the swing weight right and the length right, and then there was even a little custom work done on them. And
I need the lie angles changed.
That's true. Oh, I forgot about that. Yep, changed the lie angles, made sure the lofts were all in check, and then we even put a little personal touch on them.
So what did they end up at? What were the lie angles before, and what are they now?
They were pretty much standard. There was like one or two that were a little upright, but for the most part, they were pretty spot on. I think there was only one or two lofts that were more than like a degree, you know, they were like a degree and a half off.
Okay.
Whether they were strong.
Because I definitely tend, now it's probably the way I swing, it's also my body type, I get that toe down divot pretty bad.
Yeah.
So if I don't have clubs that are a bit upright, you know, we get digging.
Yeah. So I got everything set up. So you are standard lofts, and we went about a degree and a half up from standard. So from
the way I like
standards, but a degree and a half up. And then we threw a little stamp on him as well.
We did throw a little stamp on.
Yeah, a little stamping on the irons.
So Knudsen texted me like 2 days after I gave him my sticks. He was like, "What kind of stamping you want on there? You know, you want like Tursky or something?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Just hit him with the T."
Like the old
Tiger Woods
Titleist irons.
What do you have? The 680s or
yeah,
something?
I think they were 680 MBs with a little T on them, the Tiger Woods model. Yeah.
So we went with the red T.
Yeah.
Shout out Rutgers University, the Scarlet Knights. We went with the Scarlet T.
Yep, and yep, got a little T on the toe, so it has a little bit of that look to it. But we didn't get crazy though. It's still a Mizuno club. I mean, there's no trying to fool anybody.
When we go live with this podcast, we should throw one up on Instagram.
Yeah, I'll throw a few.
Let the people see.
Yeah, I'll take a couple pictures. I'll set them up.
Let the people see the irons, you know?
That's right. Let them judge how good they look. So they're about a degree and a half up. Lies are standard. Lies about a degree and a half up. Loft standard. Standard length. And the grips have, two wraps of tape underneath?
Two wraps.
Yep, two wraps. So everything's to kind of the Tursky spec, but they did take a little longer, but I'm not gonna lie. I had a lot of down in the shop. I had my dad's clubs to re-grip.
It was more the excitement of seeing them because it's not like I'm going to play.
Exactly. We just got 3 inches of snow.
I just wanted to look at them.
Well, the worst is it was 62 days ago, and then we got 3 inches of snow yesterday. Yeah. So welcome to Michigan.
Nasty.
Yeah, welcome to Michigan. You could golf 2 days ago, not yesterday, but. So that kind of easily transitions into we've got a guest who is probably a little bit better than me at building clubs.
He actually knows what he's doing.
How
long do you think it would take him to reshaft my clubs?
Probably like a couple hours, maybe. I mean, this guy, his shop is spotless, which is unlike mine, which is just stuff everywhere.
He's a friend of the family too.
He is. He tends to do a little content for the old WRX.
He does.
And he does a pretty good job at it. It's pretty interesting. His latest video that just went up last week was turning ferrules, which
got to turn those ferrules.
And they are tough.
Very important.
Mine aren't bad. I sent him a picture of those when I did them. He was like, "That's not too bad. You're getting better." So,
I was gonna say, "Did you even turn mine?"
Yeah, I did. So he wasn't, you know, blown away, but he at least said, "I'm getting better," and it was a respectable job.
What about the stamp job? What did he say about the stamp?
I don't think I sent that over to him, so I didn't see that. So I'll definitely have to send it over and make sure that is up to stuff. But there wasn't any double stamps or anything like that, so I'm good. They look pretty solid. So yeah, so I got a chance to talk to Ryan Barath. about pretty much everything club building. And like I said, he's a super knowledgeable dude. And he's super nice. Knows a ton about beer as well. So we didn't really get a whole lot into that. But, you know, just know if you need a suggestion on what to buy one evening, he's definitely got a go-to.
Now, I feel a little bit left out because you did this interview without me.
I did. You were...
But I haven't heard it, so I'm excited to listen.
Exactly. So, yeah, you were unfortunately on assignment, so I had to kind of do this one solo.
Had a little something going on.
Exactly, which should be interesting. We won't say anything about it yet. We'll, you know, we'll get to that in a few weeks, everybody will get to see that because it's pretty cool. But, yeah, I had to fly solo on this one, and, you know, it was a little intimidating, but I think I handled it all right.
But it was two guys talking golf.
It was. Yeah, it wasn't three. It was still two guys talking golf.
So, all right. Well, let's take a listen.
Yeah, take a listen, and, yeah, we'll see you guys later.
Enjoy.
All right. So we got Ryan Barrett here. You've probably seen him on our site or his YouTube channel, and he's a master club builder, club fitter. He's basically a golf geek. So, Ryan, how's it going?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Ryan and I had a little technical difficulty going here, but we've got it figured out. So,
we're ready to go.
I know, finally. But so yeah, Ryan. So how'd you get into golf?
So for me, when I was a kid, I was around 10 years old, which would have been the spring after Tiger Woods won the Masters. And a bunch of my friends who I used to play golf with, being Canadian, played hockey with, being Canadian, that was like the thing you do. Were like, you want to go play golf? So I turned to my dad, holding the landline phone to my head, and I said, "Do I own golf clubs?" And with that, he went out to the garage and found a set of golf clubs, and we went out, and one of the parents dropped us off, and we played, and I was awful. And at that point, I was hooked.
Yeah, I think most of us are pretty awful that first time.
I can actually still remember like the being stuck in a bunker, and just like swinging and swinging and swinging. Thinking, and then finally one of them just like, "You can just throw it out on the green." I was like, "I'm gonna get better at this. I'm hooked now."
Yeah, it's funny how that one little thing will just get their hooks into you and suck you in.
I don't remember a single shot except for the fact that like I was stuck in that bunker.
Now looking back on that experience, do you think the clubs you were using were properly built and fitted to you?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm pretty sure that my dad bought the clubs that I was using at the time at a flea market where we moved a couple times when I was a kid, just a few years before that. And I'm pretty sure at some point he was at a flea market and was like, "Yeah, this is a good deal for like $50. some zinc Northwesterns.
Oh, I remember Northwesterns. So
I grew up with those.
Yeah, I think my neighbor around here, there was a shop called Pro Golf, and she got us a deal on them because they carried them, and I remember seeing those things. I don't really miss them.
No, that's something I'll never have to worry about ever again.
So then, after playing golf, how did that transition into becoming a builder, fitter, and like just getting becoming a huge part of your life?
Yeah, well, there's a few kind of steps that took place. One was the fact that when I was a kid, I was really into like skateboarding and riding my bike and all kinds of stuff. And because my dad was a fabricator, like a machinist, because of that, he was always kind of taking things apart, and he was really generous in letting me take things apart. I disassembled lawnmowers and toaster ovens when they stopped working. And it just kind of carried on to everything that I ever kind of touched. So from skateboards, I took everything apart just because I was never very good, but it was like, I was always curious, like kind of how everything worked. And I remember disassembling a lawnmower in my parents' driveway. And my dad was like, "So what's up?" And I'm like, "I don't know what any of these parts do, but I'll never put it back together, Dad." He's like, "Okay, that's fine. We'll throw it out now." So when I got into golf, I immediately, as soon as someone said like, "You can change the golf shaft," like what's in there, I was like, okay, how do I do this? And at the time, it would have been Golfsmith. Golfsmith had like a very rudimentary kind of website and like books and stuff like that. So I was subscribing to those types of things, and it was just like any tool I could purchase, anything like that. And it kind of carried on as a teenager, and it got to the point where I was really hooked on it, reading golf magazines and all kinds of stuff. And as like golf forums got more popular and those types of things. And then when I was, I think I was 16, and actually I still own it to this day. I was probably the only 16-year-old that ever asked for a Lyloff machine for their birthday. It's a true story, completely true story. And because of that, there was, just after that, I'd end up going to the Golfsmith club building school down in Austin, Texas. My parents were like super supportive and like, hey, you like doing this stuff? Go ahead. And I went down, actually the first time I went down by myself entirely, which was like a little freaky when you're, I think I was 17 at the time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And trust me, there's not a lot of 17-year-olds interested in going to club building school. So I was kind of like the odd man out there, but it was a lot of fun, and I actually made friends that I'm still in contact with now, even though they're not with Golfsmith, people who work there, and that was a lot of fun. And then I went down a few years later and finished the master program, and at that point, I was a little older. It was like 2 straight weeks, all kinds of like in-depth working with those kind of things, and I just brought all those skills back and just kind of did them in my garage and for friends, and never really thought that it'd be something that you could do professionally unless you worked on the PGA Tour. And it ended up actually something that I worked at for a really long time. So
that's pretty cool. I mean, it's not too many 17-year-olds that know, like, I want to be a club builder that early. I mean, for me, it didn't hit till probably mid-late 20s. So to be that early is pretty unique.
I was just a nerd. I'm not kidding. Like, it was one of those like weird things where I was just so into it all the time. And I think it was because I was never a great, like, I'm an okay golfer. I'm close to scratch. I'm like a 4 handicap, give or take.
Yeah, you're way better than me.
And so because of that, and I had friends who are like definitely scratch, I was always looking for that edge. And I'm like, what can I do to my golf equipment? How can I change this? They hit it so much further than me. What can I do? And I think that was what really actually, to be honest, probably drove me into it so much more than if I was like really good or if I was just awful. I was just kind of in that tweener territory where I was like, I need to learn more about this. And then I worked at a golf course, and it was like, I started doing like kind of fittings with ping fitting carts with like members, which the pro loved because then he didn't have to do anything and I didn't make any money off it.
Exactly.
Got to keep paying me minimum wage to clean golf carts and then do the occasional fitting. And from there, it just continued on. And so I worked, after I finished high school, went to college, and I was super pumped to work at golf in a big box store. Because at the time, that was like the only thing you could really do, to be honest. So I did that, and as I finished school, one of the guy who ran the pro shop, as they called it, or the repair center, ended up moving to another store. So I just kind of ended up kind of getting the job.
That's nice.
Because I knew what I was doing. And so I had finished school and I was working there. And it was a lot of fun, but I also realized that I wanted to continue to move on. So I ended up through kind of chance encounters along the way, and me being a very persistent child, well, or young adult at the time, I just kept emailing OEMs all the time. I would email companies here in Canada. It's not the same because a lot of the companies here work in much smaller capacities than they do in the States. So because of that, I was just emailing CEOs or presidents of like OEMs here in Canada and being like, hey, I can build golf clubs. I can fit golf clubs. Do you have any kind of thing like that? And it was always, would you like to start in customer service? Would you like to start in customer service? And that's really the last thing anyone in their 20s wants to do, is sit behind a phone all day.
Yeah.
And then I ended up being really lucky and working for Titleist for 2 summers as a kind of club fitter / tech rep, which was really cool. Met a lot of people. And what ended up happening was one day there was a, like a new company starting up that did like specialized in club fitting and club building. And I just happened to run into their, one of their founders while working for Titleist. So, I might have made it a slightly shorter day, work day, to go head over and kind of meet this guy and see their shop and everything. And I was hooked. Like right then and there.
That's pretty awesome.
Again, it's just, it's one of those things where it kind of just happened to work out that way. And within three weeks of my summer contract kind of finishing, I ended up working there. And that was it. I was running a build shop.
That's kind of like a dream scenario.
As many people have said, although I kind of attribute it more to hard work or a little bit of luck, some people say that I carry around a giant horseshoe.
So when you started getting into this, what was like the first thing that kind of blew your mind? Because I think for me, when I started messing around with shafts and all that, was the thought that when you slice the ball, the shaft was too stiff. Because I was under the impression that the shaft wasn't catching up, the ball's going right, I'm swinging too hard.
It wasn't your fault.
Yeah, exactly. I just swing too hard. So
oh,
what,
me too, of
what
course.
Was the first thing that kind of like blew your mind?
I can distinctly remember, and it had actually nothing to do with golf shafts. It was wedge grinding. Because I had a grinder and I was always kind of like tweaking stuff. It was just kind of one of those things just because I was bored. I would take club heads and just grind them in my parents' garage. No dust mask or anything, of course.
Well, no, of course not.
No, why would I do that? And no. So I think I was watching a telecast one time and Phil Mickelson said something like, yeah, I have the leading edge really sharp so I get more spin. Which, of course, is a total lie.
Oh, yeah.
Leading edge has nothing to
no
do
sense.
With spin. But I thought, oh, man, that's how I'll spin it more. So I went out to the garage and I just grinded away at my 60-degree wedge forever until it was like razor sharp. It dug in. It was the worst wedge grind of all time. But that to me was like, okay, I get it now. And then I started like really tweaking. I ended up going to like used club stores and buying wedges for like $30 and $40. The grooves were just shot on them. But I would just spend time like shaping and grinding. And that to me was so much fun because you could go out and you could actually see a physical difference in how the ball reacted and how it sounded when you hit shots around the green, especially the sand trap. And I think that to me, like the tweaking of golf equipment, that and lie angles was the other one, because a lie angle has such a huge effect on where the ball goes. And now we understand with TrackMan that it has nothing to do with divot, but more of before impact. And I bought my first used set of golf clubs. They were Ping I2s. I was so excited. And I hooked the living hell out of them for round after round after round of golf. And I had no idea. And they were, I think at the time it would have been Blue Dot. So we're talking about a 5'6" dumpy kid trying to hit shots with golf clubs built for a guy who was probably like 6'3". And I had no idea what was going on. So I called Ping Canada at the time and got a lie angle fitting. And they're like, yeah, you need to go a little flatter. So went, I think at the time would have been orange dot, so 2 degrees flat from 1 degree upright. And it just changed my golf game. And I thought, if you can do that little thing to a golf club and really see a difference in ball flight and accuracy and all that stuff, that to me was like the game changer. I think that really, really hooked me with like talking to golfers and saying, hey, you know why you hit that shot and that kind of stuff. I think that's where I kind of became known as the guy who was more knowledgeable in club building around like the golf course where I worked at. So,
and then the floodgates kind of open because people know that's you and they're going to ask you all the time, man, oh, I'm hitting it here, I'm hitting it there, whatever. What can I do?
Oh, I used to have members come up to me all the time. I worked there for, I think, 3 summers. And it was just like, oh, man, Ryan, you know what you're talking about. What's going on here? So go to the range and, like, and I wasn't a teacher. I don't really understand, like, golf swing. I know it a little bit more now, like most kind of people who have worked with people and worked with golfers and, like, seen my own golf swing and that kind of stuff, which is never pretty. But to see to understand it more and able to explain it to people, I think that's the biggest thing with like club fitting or teaching, is just being able to explain to the golfer what's happening And if they don't understand, explain it in a different way. And I think that's the real key. I think that's what I'm pretty good at. And from a club building perspective or a club fitting perspective, it's being able to kind of help them see where improvements can happen as well, and like what they're doing or what changes need to be made in their golf equipment to actually help them improve.
Yeah, I think I don't want to call it dumbing it down, but explaining it different is a lot harder than it sounds. Because when I was in my fitting, I'm working with this guy, Adam, and you could tell that he was kind of relieved that he could tell me things that he couldn't tell normal people, you know, because I would kind of get it. But there was still stuff that he was kind of like, all right, I still got to take this down a level. So it's got to be tough to do.
I think it's really difficult for people who are learning it, because they're so enthusiastic. And I see it all the time. It's people who are really enthusiastic about kind of explaining the real details of like TrackMan or GC Quad or any type of radar or camera system. Be like, this is why your spin axis is tilted because of the line angle on your golf club, and the club faces a certain way, and the more loft that's on a golf club, the more you're going to miss versus the club like your driver, which line angle is not going to affect because of loft. And you're like, you see eyes glaze over immediately.
Yep.
And you just go back and okay, let's discuss this a different way. And I think that's really the key. Is being able to kind of see the level that you're communicating at. And it doesn't mean to be simple, and doesn't mean to talk down to people. It just means to be able to explain it on a level that they will understand, to say, look, do you miss it left? Well, yeah. Do you find that like there's a, like certain clubs you'll hit? Yeah, my shorter clubs. Okay, well, this is why. And you get out the old magnet. There's a tool, it's a magnet with about a 12-inch rod sticking out of it, and you can just show it really quickly and be like, hey, this is what happens at impact. And then they immediately understand. It's a lot of times too. I'm a visual learner. And so for me, like, I like using those types of tools because I find for me it's easy to explain, and then I find a lot of people understand it better that way. When you can just, if you can explain it to them, and in a simple way that you understand as well. If you can't explain something in a simple way, you probably don't understand it that well in the first place. So
that's probably a good point.
That's a big key.
So you started doing all these videos, which I love, by the way. And I think I might have influenced you a little bit to start them, since I used to bug you all the time about turning ferrules. So
yeah.
What made you kind of decide you wanted to go down that road?
I think there's just a lack of information on how clubs actually get put together. And the reason is, I always find, especially online, on a lot of different forums, there's a local golf forum here where I kind of am on frequently, as well as Golfworks. And people are like, why do they charge this for like a shaft puller? Why do they charge this much for... I just want to use these shafts in another golf club. And like, for me, as a club builder, people don't understand. It's kind of like working in essentially any industry. If you're reusing a part, you have to do twice as much work to that part to get it to the point where you can work with it again. So to build a new set of golf clubs with new components takes very little time. To rebuild with old components and like putting two things together takes like four times as much time as it really should, where people just think, oh, you just pull them apart and put them back together. Well, yeah, if it was that easy, why don't you do it, kind of thing, right? And I find that it just explaining the process really helps people understand kind of what goes into it. And the ferrule thing, I being someone who uses Twitter a lot and is known for like their club building, I have a couple club builders, Tom Horley, who's out in Europe there. He calls me the ferrule police. It's just a title I guess I've earned just by seeing like terrible work. And I think I very much take pride in what I do when I build a golf club for myself or for anybody else. And I think it's the details that people see. You may not see the transmission on a vehicle, but if the paint job is scratched, then someone's going to walk up and go, "Well, paint job is scratched." Or you can you can make every spec on a golf club perfect, but if you can't make a ferrule look good, then you should probably take some more time to do it properly, because that's what people see.
It's true, and I kind of agree with him as you being the ferrule police. And yeah. I felt really proud because the last iron job I did, which was for Tursky, you actually commented on my ferro and said, "That's not bad."
That's pretty, and, yeah.
And for me, I'm going to take that as a pretty big compliment.
It's it's one of those things where, and I used to walk around like a golf store, big box store, and look at wedges or look at irons, and you can tell the OEMs that actually like basically order their parts to fit. So they just polish and they're good to go. Like they fit perfectly. They're typically collared ferrules. There's not a lot of work to be done. But if you walk around and you pay attention, which most people will never notice, but if you walk around and you pay attention, like bad chip, bad ferrule job, loose epoxy, like all this stuff. And to me, like I wouldn't, it's in the back of my head, like something wasn't right when this club was put together. And that's kind of one of the reasons as well why I got into club building. Was because I grew up in a, like, probably, I'd say, more than an hour away from, like, the nearest big box golf store. So I kind of either had to, like, learn how to grip golf clubs myself, which my dad taught me when I was, like, I think, 11. Pulled me into the garage with, like, acetone. Or no, it would have been Varsol. And was like, "Here, I'm going to show you how to regrip a golf club." And I think that was one of the things, too, that, like, really got me hooked was, hey, you can change these things really quick. It's not that difficult. He did it because used to be able to buy grips at like the hardware store or something. Like the local hardware store would have like one grip that you could buy.
And it was like a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. A buck a grip for like star grips or something like that. And yep. As soon as you were able to do that and I understood kind of how those things worked and that you could do it yourself, why would I pay someone else to do it? Especially if I was such a nerd, I want to know everything that happens. Like I'm not a car nerd, so I take my car to get an oil change. I know how to do it. I don't have the tools to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas with golf clubs, I have the tools to do it, so I'd rather just do it myself.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I mean, I kind of wanted to do it because I'm a tinkerer, and I wanted to change shafts all the time, so change grips all the time, and I was too cheap to really pay somebody to do it, and I didn't want to wait. You know, a lot of times you take it to like a big box store and it was like a whole set of clubs to be regripped is like 3-4 days, something like that. Like, I want them tomorrow. So I'm going to do it myself.
I hated waiting. I understand from the customer's perspective too, because being someone who worked in like a big box store, you do like one or two grips at a time, but you wouldn't do a full set. And then you'd get the argument rule. What if I bring two clubs in, and then two clubs in, and then two clubs in? It's like, well, you can go through the trouble, man, but like, it does take time, and I have other people. I usually that kind of stuff would be done either after hours or before hours, because you want to make as many people as happy as possible. And yeah. I'm not complaining about it. Actually, like, I love that job, and I learned so much. But there are difficulties with that because it's kind of the general golf consumer that doesn't understand what goes into it. And that's kind of part of the reason for the videos in the whole place was to, and I think part of it started was how to regrip a golf club. I was sitting there with my phone and I was having a beer and just like ripping golf clubs in my basement. And I was like, I should show people how this is done. Cause there are some terrible videos online of how people do it really wrong. And one of the biggest things is people would throw it in a clamp and then cut towards themselves. I've seen so many accidents like that. So I actually hold the grip and cut away from myself. And cut away from myself. And that to me is like the biggest difference. Like you never run the risk of cutting yourself. And you see people like trying to cut and then it gets caught and then they're like trying to reach around. Like you slice your wrist with a dirty knife, man. Ugh. That is the last thing you want to do. And I've seen some terrible, I don't save grips. I don't use the needles or anything like that. I've just seen too many accidents. So for me, it's a matter of part of it's safety and having people understand what goes into it. And also, making sure that if you watch somebody build a golf club for you should make sure that they're doing it right. Like just knowledge, like just sharing knowledge for free. I'm doing it because I want to. I want to share that with people. I'm not trying to make money off it. No one's getting rich making money doing club building videos on YouTube.
Well, not yet.
Not yet, right? It's no music video, that's for sure. Or like some movie trailer. It was a fake movie trailer online. I'm sure I get a lot more hits, but
I don't know. I think you could add some explosions and crazy pyrotechnics to your videos. You could add
once that I in. Learn that kind of editing, I'll be really impressed with just myself. Maybe I'll just get into an industry.
So with grips, like, you know, they're saying regripping, what are your thoughts on using air, you know, using a compressor to put grips on and pull grips off, as opposed to using solvent and grip tape?
Oh, man, why don't we just get into spining right away, and then I can rant. You know, I prefer tape. I prefer tape because it's on. I understand people who, and I use cord grips too. So if you try and blow a cord grip on, you're actually pulling the, you're physically expanding the material. And then a lot of times it doesn't really work that well. You can do it with putter grips. You can do it with grips that aren't going to have a lot of force on them, which is why putter grips work so well. You can kind of test, go back and forth. But I there's nobody on the PGA Tour who's using air. There's not a single player, as far as I'm aware. Part of it too is because they get the grips for free.
And I get that does help.
Which really helps, and I totally understand that. But the best players in the world are not using that to put their golf clubs on. You can use them in fittings, you can use them in all that kind of stuff. But I really believe that a grip is a disposable part of a golf club, like a ferrule. Use it once and get rid of it. Like, there's no point risking being overshot and having your grip twist on you. So I don't like using it. I like using it in fittings because you can adjust the grip size and all these like beautiful aspects of like really intricate detail in a fitting to be like, hey, this is how many wraps, this is how it feels, this is great. Do you like this? Do you don't like this? But as far as like the permanent building of a set of golf clubs, just put tape, man. Tape and some actual grip solvent. And it's just so much easier. You never have to worry about it. And it's done. It's a disposable piece of a golf club. It's not something that's an investment into a golf club and you carry on with three sets. It's just you use it once and you get rid of it. So great for fitting, not so great for building a final set of golf clubs.
I think I'm happy to say that I haven't seen anybody try to reuse ferrules yet. So that's a good thing.
Oh, I see it all the time though.
Really?
People are like, oh, set of pullouts, ferrules are still in good shape.
Oh no.
Okay.
Oh no.
Oh, I see it. I don't see it all the time. I used to see it a lot more, but oh, I've seen everything. I've seen every bad piece of golf equipment advice. I've also seen good advice, but people just don't understand that, like, it's disposable pieces of a golf club. Tip weights, ferrules, and grips. You know, if just use a new one. They're not expensive. Grips are probably the most expensive part, but like the full, like the rest of it over the course of a period of time, it's not a big deal. Just use
them. Yeah. So, in all the things in the shop that you can do, what is your least favorite? Like when somebody comes in and they're like, "I want this," and you're just like, "Oh man, it's just, it takes a lot of time," or it's, you know, tedious, or what's your least favorite part of doing or part of club work?
The one thing that I'm really lucky with now is the fact that I can kind of, because it's not my main source of like what I do, I can kind of just say I don't really want to do that. But I used to really hate swapping shafts in sets of golf clubs. Like, I have this old set and I want the shafts from that into a new set.
Yep.
There's a lot of reasons for it. And it's not because I'm a golf snob and I don't think, and I'm like trying to sell you something. It's because if you want to get into the like details of it, the bottom bore to ground measurement, you can look that up, is different for different sets of irons. So if you have a set where the measurement is much longer or much shorter and you switch it in and you want to save your grips and all that stuff, and I get it. I can totally understand why people want to save that money. I appreciate that. But if you want to move from one set to another and you wonder why you're short ironed because the hosel bottom bore, the ground measurement's longer and they're suddenly longer and they're not matching across the set, and then you got to do all those kind of things, and that's what I really dislike, because then I get blamed. Even if you try to explain to people, it's like, well, they were standard length and now they're half an inch short, or they're standard length and now they're a quarter inch long. And it's because those are very, very like simple measurements that a lot of times aren't available to the average golf consumer. A lot of club building magazines or like component manufacturers put those pieces of information in their catalogs with the clubs, but you don't get that with OEMs. So to say that, oh, I'm pulling this set from a Titleist or a TaylorMade, or I'm not picking on anybody, I'm just like using it as an example.
Yeah.
It could be longer or shorter. And that's really frustrating because it's difficult to explain to someone why they need to buy new or why they need new grips. And then the consumer gets frustrated and it's my job to explain it to them. But it's also very difficult to kind of justify because they don't understand. And yeah. I think that, well, it fits in this, it fits on that. Well, it does. It doesn't necessarily, and that can be difficult. So that's the one thing that I really don't like doing is the full shaft swap. And then plus it takes like three times the amount because you got to get tip weights out and you got to make sure there's no epoxy. Whereas if you start new, like I said before, you can build a set of golf clubs in like one quarter of the time has been reusing components.
Yeah, I actually ran into what you're talking about just last year. So I had a iron shaft that I was testing, and I ended up really liking it. And had I had it in, it was just a 6-iron, I think. I pulled that one out, and then I got the rest of the set, and the bore depth on that next iron was, like I said, a quarter inch short. So I had to sit there, like, do I order another shaft? Do I put an extension in? And I ended up going the cheap route, put an extension in. But I totally ran into that same thing, and it was a pain in the butt.
And even across a set of golf clubs, if you try and hard step or soft step, they're not consistent.
Yeah.
And that's what's really difficult. And that's where, when you're building a set of golf clubs from scratch, you can fine-tune the clubs. If one needs a little bit more tipping or just leaving it the way it is, then you can really fine-tune kind of what goes into it. And my philosophy is, when I'm building a set of golf clubs for anybody or for myself, is that you build them to the expectation that they're going to be the absolute best that they're going to be. Now there are times when I'm like testing golf clubs or testing a golf shaft, and I'm honestly probably just going to put it together and take it to the range and then pull it apart.
But yeah.
If I know that I'm building a set of golf clubs that I'm going to use for a full season, then I'm taking a lot of time for myself or for anybody else, because I want to make sure that those clubs are absolutely the best they can possibly be. I don't like using the word perfect, because it's perfect isn't possible.
Yeah.
But if you can build them to the absolute best that they can be for that customer, to the specs that they are fitted for, then they're going to play their best golf, and that to me is what's most important.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole reason you tinker, you change stuff, whatever, is because you're expecting to play better golf. I don't think anybody's swapping shafts or changing lengths or whatever and expecting it to be worse.
Well, no, yeah, exactly. No one goes into a fitting to play worse golf.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get fit for a suit to look terrible. Right? It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I want that right arm to be a little longer than the left arm. And
I
want
to look
to be real
like
maggy.
Lumpy and lopsided. So you can just make that one arm a little bigger.
So, in all of your building years and all that, what was the craziest build that someone came in and asked you to do? Like put a 5-wood shaft in a driver or something crazy? Like, what was nuts?
Oh, man. There's a lot. I can think of like the craziest build that I've done from scratch before. The one story that I love to tell, and because I'm sitting in my basement shop as like I record as I'm talking to you right now, is I have a signed flag from a Canadian Open, and David Frost, Australian Tour Pro.
Yep.
He was still playing like sporadically on the PGA Tour. He got an exemption to the Canadian Open at Hamilton Golf and Country Club, and I was still working at the big box store. It was a golf town here in Canada. And it was Saturday night. We closed at 6 o'clock. It was still sunny out, middle of summer. David Frost walks in with a set of Titleists that he bought off the wall at our store on Wednesday for the Pro-Am. And he says, the shafts are a little heavy. They were S300s. I need something a little lighter and stiffer. I have a set of pullouts in my car.
Oh, no.
How does this guy have... First of all, who's traveling around with X100 pullouts?
Golf to be nice people?
Yeah. And so my boss at the time, great, like, he was super nice. He's like, Ryan, will you stay to, like, fix this? Because there's no tour vans. A lot of the tour vans, especially that back, like, then... They didn't come up for that one event because crossing the border is a nightmare. They have to do all the inventory and they're not going to sell and all these things. It's just a nightmare to cross the border with all that gear. So they don't do it. TaylorMade does it now, I think. But anyways, so he comes walking into the golf shop and he's like, can you reshaft these for my Sunday round?
Oh.
He was out like the second group on Sunday. And I was like, yeah, I guess. Can I stay? So I'm I was 17 or 18 at the time. I was like, yeah, I can do that, I guess. My boss was cool. He stuck around. So he pulled all the club heads, let them cool down. clean the tips, check the head weights. I think they must have been from a set of Titleist because the lengths came out pretty good. Old like ZB combos. I'm a nerd, so yeah, I remember all this stuff. And quick set everything. I don't even. This is funny. I actually probably didn't turn the ferrules down. And I said, you know what? You can, like, my boss told him, he's like, what time do you need these for? His tee off time was super early in the morning on a Sunday. He was dew sweeping. And he said, come pick him up at like 8 o'clock. So my boss met him that morning. And then I went over because I had tickets for the Sunday. I met David. So I built those clubs in like 45 minutes, like pulled apart, glued, quick set against the wall and just like left. And I went home with the coolest story ever. And a signed flag that said, great work on my clubs, Ryan, from David Frost. It's framed in my basement here.
That's and pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's like by no means my claim to fame. but then what he was really cool about was the fact that he took us through the clubhouse and locker room and gave us his locker passes for the afternoon. So I got to eat the players' buffet in the afternoon. So that was like super exciting for me. That's awesome. I wasn't old enough to drink at the time. So I would have definitely taken advantage of that on a Sunday afternoon at this point. But that was really cool because it's still like one of those things where I distinctly remember him walking in and being like, can you reshaft these? And I'm looking around going, do I say no to a PGA Tour player? That's probably not a good idea for like my long-term cred.
That's true.
So, and it was fun. It was really cool. He was super nice. Again, he was very patient. He hung around and watched me like kind of build them up and then left and I guess went to his hotel and came back in the morning, met my boss. I didn't meet him there. He wasn't working the next day. But that was really cool. That was probably, again, it's one of those kind of funny stories. I built clubs for like a lot of like really famous people. I won't name drop. I don't need to. But like as far as a PGA Tour player, that was really cool. That was pretty cool to just have him come in and like just trust me. He was like, yeah, you know what you're doing. Go ahead. So I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Exactly.
No, yeah. Oh, sure. I got 20 years' experience.
Yeah.
And is it different, like, at least, I guess I never went through it, but in other aspects of my life, is it difficult when somebody just, like, hovers while you're building a club? Because you know that's the time when, like, that tip weight's going to get stuck or something's not going to go right and it's just going to be a disaster. Do you ever run into that?
It used to, like, make me nervous, to be honest. And a lot of times people get, like, just like in your personal space, it's annoying in general. But I think that to me, it's being able to explain to that person. It doesn't really bother me. A lot of times it's because they're curious. Like who wouldn't be curious if you've never seen a golf club get built before? And so I respect that as like why someone would want to do that. It doesn't really bother me. And that's actually when I do my videos now, why I try and do them in one take, because the viewer's watching me. So if it takes longer, then I get to explain to them what the problem is. And I think that's really important. So if someone is watching me like frequency a set of parallel golf shafts that I've weight sorted and like, well, why is that one still that number? Or why did it not move to a certain number or anything like that? Especially when you're working with like kind of parallel stuff, it's the ability to explain. And it doesn't really bother me because like I was a curious, even it doesn't matter how old you are. If you're curious about something, I'll explain it to you. I mean, I used to get it a lot when I was a lot younger. People were like, you know what you're going to build these for me? And I'm like, yeah. Like, well, you don't know what you're doing, right? And I mean, I think the perception has changed a little bit within the industry and kind of who knows what. And it's not the 65-year-old guy in his garage building golf clubs anymore. It's people who understand technology, and you see that with teachers as well. And I think that's really important is when people ask a question, it doesn't matter why they don't know, but it's my job to explain it to them. So if it means that they're going to hang out and watch me bend their irons because they've never seen an iron be bent before or bend their putter or even like reshaft a golf club, it doesn't really bother me because I enjoy explaining it to people. I think that's really important is to be able to teach people what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of how you and I met, which was a couple of years ago, realizing like, oh, I know who kind of you are from GolfWRX and all that, but then also like, you know way more than me, so I'm going to start picking your brain. And it's cool that because you get this this all this info, and a person like yourself doesn't make me feel like an idiot for not knowing.
I've never liked people who are, and I know a lot of, and I've been really lucky to work with a lot of people in the golf industry, from different OEMs. I'm not going to pick or choose one. And I've always been super impressed with people who are willing to sit down and explain to you why something happens. And I take great responsibility in the fact that if someone's going to sit down and do that to me and show me that respect, I owe that respect to other people. So when someone asks a question, it's not because they're stupid. It's because they don't know. I don't know. I don't know a lot of things. I ask questions all the time. And I think that's really important. It's, you always want to learn. Like, never stop learning. It's kind of one of those things that I wake up. It's kind of like one of my mantras, I guess, when I build golf clubs or I'm doing anything, really. It's like, if I don't know, like, I'm going to learn. Do my videos. It took me like probably 2 hours to edit my first YouTube video. I can edit one now in like 15 minutes. And we're talking like a 30-year-old guy learning something over the course of watching YouTube videos. So, and that's why I think the first time we met was it the driver shootout? I actually got picked just kind of randomly.
Yeah, and it was Gear Trials 2016.
I think I got the t-shirt. And meeting a bunch of people who were like-minded golf nerds was awesome. And I still talk to Sean, who's at, was it Carl's? Right? Carl's, yeah. Sean is going to be like a PhD physics or engineer. Like, that's what he was going to, and he's fitting golf clubs. And I'm like, I still bug him on Twitter all the time. Like, can you explain, like, the fluid dynamics of the cream in my coffee and why it does this in slow motion? Because that's the thing. Like, you never really stop learning, and you just turn to people that know more than you. And I think that regardless of it, like, being club building or teaching, I love listening to teachers, although, like, I'm not a big student of the golf swing, or talking to engineers. If you ask questions to people, they're typically going to respect the fact that you're curious. So I try and pass that forward.
I mean, that was for me why I kind of joined Golf WRX back in like 2006 or whatever, was just the fact that, like, I wanted to know more about clubs. And I'm the same thing as you. I'm not a big swing guy, but I love knowing about new shafts and heads and clubs and, you know, do they work together? Do they not? How do they perform? And that stuff just, it piques my interest. It keeps me, like, you know, loving the game.
Oh, it's the best. And that's what I love about the forums, to be honest. Like, not to sound like the homer here on the podcast, but is the fact that people share. And sometimes there's misinformation, and I try and, like, step in and help people, not because they're not knowledgeable, it's just because they don't understand. Yeah. And it's really important to use that kind of open source to understand and have and teach people along the way. And that's what I really think that's important, because I'm like, I was always like super, I always kind of joke. I remember when we did the gear trials thing years ago now, it was like, I'm less than, like, I was one of the first 5,000 members of GolfWorks. I'm like, man, I'm such a nerd. I just look back, I'm like, I was such a nerd, and I didn't know anything. And I still don't think that I know everything. And I, as I say, every day you're trying to learn something new. And although I'm not, like, day-to-day in the golf industry anymore, I do a lot of work in it. I work with, like, a few friends that are at work at OEMs and work at component manufacturers and those types of things. And it's exciting because I get to pick the brains of engineers. That to me is like a 15-year-old kid telling me, like, hey, you're going to work at a big box store and sell golf balls to people. And one day I wish I could ask the lead engineer of Ping or Mizuno or Callaway to be like, hey, how does this work? And they're like, yeah, let me explain it to you. And you're like, wow, that is just, I'm so privileged to be able to do that. It's pretty cool.
It is. I mean, golf is a special little world like that, where you can go and ask those people those questions when you get the opportunity, and they have no problem telling you the answer. You know, and it's like, you can just see or hear the passion that comes from them when they explain it to you. And you know, like, it's not a job, it's a love, and they just happen to be, you know, getting paid for it.
Yeah, and I know I've talked to a couple different people I've been lucky to have conversations with, and a lot of times I ask, like, how did you get into the golf industry? And it's because, well, I like golf.
Yeah.
How many people get to say that? How many people get to go to their job and be like, well, how'd you get into accounting? I really love numbers. Not a lot. I mean, I get that. And, like, and you know, and I mean, there, I'm sure there are people who are really good at it. Like, I got into golf because I was a physics nerd. The first time I got to learn what TrackMan was, I was hooked. I was a huge, like, physics, I still am. Like, I love learning about the way a golf ball flies and, like, what goes into it and all these different aspects. So I think anybody who is able to do their job passionately, that's a really cool thing, regardless of industry. Like, if you, I know people who work on cars that know way more than I do. And I just respect the fact that they know what they're doing or yeah. know how to code a website or edit a video. I don't know that stuff. And I'm really, again, I'm really lucky now because I work in the, like, the craft beer industry quite a bit. And people joke that, oh, if you talk to a brewmaster, sometimes they're kind of curmudgeon-y. But if you walk up to a guy and you ask us, like, how does this yeast strain contribute to, like, the flavor of a beer? They'll sit down and explain it to you. And you're like, whoa, you do this because you love it. Like, you don't do this because it's like a job to you. And it's just so much fun. Like, passion drives people, regardless yeah. of industry. And
no, it does.
I think that's really important for, like, whatever you do, you should be passionate about it.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do for some people. Don't let me downplay it. But yeah, you can. It definitely makes a huge difference.
So, and that's where, like, GolfWorks is so important. I think because the people who choose to post are passionate about it, even if they don't necessarily know the answer. They're trying to help, because yeah. as golfers or anybody who's, like, in an industry or just into a hobby, like, they like it because they like it. It's just, like, it's their passion. People don't get up at 6:30 in the morning to drive an hour to go play golf because it's a burden. It's because it's fun.
It's true. I mean, it can sometimes be a burden, but yeah, for the most part, it's fun.
Yeah. Some days it can feel like a burden, but not really often.
Yeah, but most days for me. So with your videos, is it something like you have, like, a list running right now and you just know, like, man, I'm going to do this one, this one, this one, and you have it kind of planned? Or is it something where, like, something just pops into your head and you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to make a video on this today. Like, how do you figure out what you're going to make?
That's a good question. I think I have answered questions from people who've commented on other videos, which is a lot of fun because, it doesn't matter how many people subscribe or whatever, but if you can answer that one question and you see that person reply and go, thank you so much, like, I didn't know that's how it worked, that's really cool. And for me, a lot of times, I do a lot of golf, like, club building, obviously, for myself, and I do a few, like, bits for friends and kind of here and there repairs. And a lot of times, if I come across a new problem, I'm like, where's my phone? where's my phone? I'm going to go, like, make sure I show people how this is done. Because if it's a shaft broken in the hosel, which happens a lot, especially in the wintertime because people are hitting off mats, yeah. Or things like that, or what's another one that I've done? I think the just how to pull a graphite shaft from a tip.
People don't really know
or, like, understand that you got to be careful if you use a shaft puller, because if you heat a golf shaft too much and try and, like, twist to pull it off, like you pull an iron shaft off of steel, you're going to torque the fibers, and the epoxy that's used in the golf shaft has a higher blah blah blah, right, kind of thing. And yep. anytime I come across a problem, and that's where, like, the, I think my frequency video came to be. Someone was like, what's that thing in your background? I was like, oh, it's my frequency machine. You want to see how it works? So I just shot a video. It's just those little things, because people ask questions. And I have a list of things that I kind of want to get to. I'm a new dad.
Yes.
And because my shop is in my basement, I have to be quiet. I have quiet hours.
Like right now?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Doors closed. I'm in the basement. Got the headphones on. Talking to you guys, and it's fun. Like I wouldn't want to not do this. And I, again, it just comes down to the fact that I'm really passionate about it. So when people ask questions to me on my comment or my video or like those kind of things. I try and give feedback. And I remember like being new on, say, like Twitter and reaching out to people. And I was like, oh man, this guy has like 500 followers and they answered my question. And that's really cool. And now when people ask me questions, I try and take as much time as possible. I'm no social media influencer, right? And I don't have
oh, come on.
That kind of, I don't have that kind of following. So I'm no Justin Bieber. He has more people follow him than the entire population of the country I live in. So
that's true. That's kind of strange.
It's nuts, right? When you think about it that way. But if you think like no laying up and stuff like that, like they just started small. And I don't ever like plan on doing that kind of stuff. But when people ask questions, it's important to answer them because every person is asking that for a reason.
Yep.
And for me, if I'm in my shop and I'm just like send out a tweet and be like, hey, like these are cool ferals. Where'd you get those ferals from? Well, I'll tell you because I'm going to support the person I got them from. Right? Like
yeah.
It's just little things. And I think that's where the golf industry itself is really cool. And I kind of see parallels into the where I work now a little bit more in the beer industry is people work together. Is that like, we're not competing really. I mean, we technically compete. I get that. But we're not competing against each other like to kill each other. But
yeah,
it's the fact that if you have a question, I'm going to help you. And if you need a piece of equipment, then I'll help you out. Like I see that all the time. If, well, I'm out of this grip. Can I come over to your shop and like pick up another grip? No problem. Like absolutely. Because I'm helping your customer and then you're going to be happy and that customer is going to be happy and they're going to tell their friends. And it's not a super competitive, like, no, I don't know. I don't know about anyone else, but I'm not getting rich in the golf industry. So not to brag, but my 2007 Toyota Matrix has like 200,000 kilometers on it. So
yep, it's pretty nice. I've seen it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Keep it clean. It holds a lot of golf clubs if you read the it holds a lot of golf clubs and a,
that's
and a
true.
Car seat.
I've seen the but, Twitter photos of you loading quite a few staff bags and stuff in the back of that thing.
Yeah. That was a fun summer. That was a lot of fun. It was a busy summer, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But that's really where the videos come from, is people's questions. People's questions and me learning new things. If I'm doing something different for the first time in a while, I reach for the camera. I reach for the camera, reach for my safety glasses, and I want to explain it. And that's really what it comes down to, is just people are curious, so I want to be able to help them.
Yeah, and what's the best way, like, I mean, I know people are going to sit there and be like, man, I wish you could do a video on this or that. What's the best way for people to ask you questions or request a video or anything like that?
You can reach out to me on Twitter at my initials, which is RDS Barath, BARATH. I've used it forever. It's golf. You'll see pictures of my food sometimes.
Yeah. A few pictures of beer up there and stuff.
Yeah, there's a few beer photos. Twitter, or if you comment on a YouTube video, or it's no big secret, but my Twitter, or sorry, my Golfworks avatar or name, whatever it is Toby Bear. There's a long story behind that. It has no relation to my name at all. but I don't mind people asking questions. And I think that's, again, it's just really important to answer people's questions, because the reason people ask is because they're curious, and there's nothing wrong with curiosity.
For sure. And we're gonna put your links to Twitter and stuff in our little article that we do on the front page. So if you want to ask Ryan something, have him do a video or request something, we'll have the links in there that you can go follow him on Twitter and check out his YouTube channel and all that. So we'll have those links. So check out that on the front page article. But
yeah, just again, anyone out there, just ask questions. I think it's really important for everyone to be able to share information. So there's no secrets behind what I do. It's like golf club building is not necessarily that difficult, but it's difficult to do with like finite detail, I think.
Yeah,
anyone can go to a golf club. It's not that difficult. If you're curious to go to a golf club, it's easy. But if you want to like fine tune swing weight and understand length and components and those kind of things, then it becomes a little bit more detailed. And that's exactly. I like to be able to help people.
Yeah, no, it's
right, turning feral, right, Brian?
I've found that over the few years.
Yeah. And I mean, I've done this for a long time. This is not new to me. I started, like, basically, I think the first time I built a golf club, I was 13. So we're talking, not to date myself, but that's that's more than 17 years ago.
That's a lot of clubs.
Think, like, I don't feel that. Yeah, it is a lot of golf clubs. It's a lot of golf clubs. So even if I just counted my own golf clubs, it's enough sets to outfit a small university team. but it never gets old. That's what I love, the challenge of building a set of golf clubs for somebody. I built golf clubs for one-handed golfers. I built golf clubs for world-ranked juniors. It doesn't matter. You're building something for somebody that they're going to take to the golf course and attempt to play their best golf. I don't care if it's to break 100 or to break 65. It doesn't matter. It's the fact that you treat every golf club like it's the most important golf club for that person. Because
it is.
If I'm standing over a putt to break 75, because I'm super pumped to do that nowadays, someone has that exact same intensity standing over a putt to break 100. It's the same thing.
For sure.
And you should respect. I think for me as a club builder, I respect the fact that I think everyone's out there to grind it. My dad's a 90 shooter, and I fit him for a new set of golf clubs last year. He broke 80.
On his load. And
he was pumped. He was pumped. He texted me. He was like, "You should see my scorecard." I'm like, "That's awesome." Like, I mean, he's been playing golf for 20 years, and he broke 80.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody's like got milestones.
He was really pumped. So. I will say, I fit him for a set of golf clubs like 2 months beforehand.
Yeah,
he hated them the first week he got them. He's like, "They're so different."
And all of a sudden,
I grind my dad about golf gear all the time. Yeah, I'm like, "I wonder how that happened, Dad." He's like, "Well, I got these new clubs. I was putting really good, though." Of course. Can't give too much credit, right?
No, you don't want your head to get too big.
No, no. Not at all.
So, all right, man. Well, I totally appreciate you taking the time here to speak to us today. I think you got a ton of awesome info. And again, if you guys want to check out more Ryan's videos and all that, we're going to have the links to them. You can go check them out. I've watched every single one. So I love them because that's right up my alley. But yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking to everybody.
Oh, man, I can't say thank you enough for like having me and then for the opportunity you guys give me at Golfworks to share my information. So if anyone knows, they don't pay me. I'm not asking for money.
We don't.
I'm really, and I'm not asking for it. I really do it because I like it. And I write articles and I do the videos because I just want to help other golfers. And the opportunity you guys give me to share that information, I can't say thanks enough. And this has really been a lot of fun too.
Hey man, I've had a blast and I always have a blast talking to you. So, yeah, man, well, thanks, and we'll definitely be seeing a lot more from you. And maybe after a few more videos, maybe we'll have you back on to talk about those.
Yeah, and if anyone has questions, I'm happy to answer them. And if you want to do this again, if we get enough questions, I'll be happy to come back and talk again about this kind of stuff.
Awesome. I can't wait. All right, man. Well, that was Ryan Brad, and this was another episode of Two Guys Talking Golf. You guys have a good one.